Welcome to TechNet Radio, your guide to the IT universe.
Hi, and welcome back to TechNet Radio. I'm Charlie Harger. We're glad you could join us this week. In today's episode, we'll be speaking with Victoria Poncini. Victoria is a network architect responsible for designing and implementing Microsoft's global wireless solution. And she's going to talk about how Microsoft does wireless. Some interesting things that go into that, including the authentication, the encryption, all sorts of security risks, and how Microsoft is trying to avoid that. So she'll be speaking with Michael Murphy and Kevin Remdy. Also in today's episode, Aurora Queen will be talking about upcoming webcasts you might want to check out and other tech events going on that it might interest you. So it's just a jammed episode today as we go wireless on TechNet Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Michael Murphy, and with me today is Kevin Remdy. Kevin, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Michael. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing very well, thanks. And let's introduce Victoria Poncini. Victoria is a network architect with the Microsoft Corporation, and she's been responsible for implementing, for designing, architecting, and implementing our global wireless solution. So, Victoria, why don't you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Okay, I've been working for Microsoft now for about the last 6 years. I came in July of 99, and the reason I was hired to Microsoft was to fulfill Bill's vision of anytime, anywhere networking, and he wanted a wireless network on our campus by the end of the year. So essentially, I had a huge job ahead of me, but I architected and implemented and deployed the first of our global wireless network, which is an 802.11b network. It runs in 2.4 gigahertz, which is the frequency band that is ubiquitous around the world for unlicensed spectrum and wireless networking. And essentially, we implemented over 5,100 access points in 63 countries, 270 sites around the world, and we have a single broadcast network SSID, which is a service set identifier, and that's the wireless network that your clients associate with. That's what it's called, an SSID. And so everyone around the world has the same SSID. You can go anywhere on around the world at Microsoft, and you can get connected to the network.
That's amazing to me. It really is, because I've been with the company 3 years, and I'm always amazed going into a new office and just turning my laptop on and connecting up. And as long as I've got network credentials, I'm on the network, and it's just amazing how seamlessly it works. And there must be some pretty big challenges there, aren't there, in terms of a wireless solution that is for a global company. Over 63,000 employees, so you have a number of challenges, I'm sure, defining and implementing that solution.
Yes, we did. we had a number and still face a number of challenges as we get ready to upgrade this global network to our next generation version. So essentially, some of the challenges that we've run into were operationally being able to provide for all the different client types that we're associating with our network. Part of our operational challenges, even today, we have about 80% of our help desk calls that come in are actually client-related issues with old drivers, bad drivers, third-party software, and certificate issues that don't allow people to connect to the network. So we do spend a lot of time tracking that. We also have to worry about rogue APs. These are APs that can be plugged into our wired network that will advertise SSIDs that are not part of our production network. And those can cause clients to associate with those APs and essentially not be provided the service that they're expecting, or you can also imagine that creates a security risk. So to mitigate some of that kind of problems, we've installed wireless group policy provisions for machines that associate with the wireless network. They actually have a wireless group policy that is now pushed down to those machines that restricts them and promotes our corporate SSID, the wireless network that the clients associate with, as the preferred network, and pushes the rest of the networks to the bottom of the list.
I was just going to suggest the question of rogue access points. You've got some control over associating the preferred Microsoft network through group policy. But do we take any steps to shut down or identify those rogue access points? I know of a number of third-party solutions that do those, that do just that, that actually proactively shut down those rogue access points. Do we do that, Victoria,
right,
or not?
We do not. And the reason we do not is because you have to be careful. Some of the third-party solutions, and actually even the new Aruba solution that we are upgrading our, we are in the process of upgrading our corporate infrastructure to, will also perform that function. The reason you don't necessarily want to do that is because it can be perceived as a denial of service attack, especially where you have these deployments in like multi-tenant office buildings, where maybe the rogues are, for example, offices that are, you know, other businesses that are your neighbors within a building, and you can't just be shutting down their networks because your network has identified it as a rogue. So you have to be very careful about going ahead and being proactive in shutting down rogue networks. In our network, in the Microsoft IT corporate network, we actually have an in-house written program that was written by our attack and penetration team, and it scours the network for rogues, and it couples that with our wireless reporting system before we go out and actually shut those down.
So you take the tact of identifying and understanding what that network is before you take any action against it.
Definitely.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, that sounds like a good plan. That's for sure. So tell me some more about some of the other technologies surrounding wireless networking. I mean, we already talked a little bit about WPA and WAP and certificate services and there are others certainly. And if you could just quickly define those and then tell us why we went with the particular solution that we're doing now in Microsoft.
Okay. So essentially, you've mentioned a bunch of acronyms, WPA and WAP, and there are three types of portions of security that are provided in a wireless network. The first portion is something called authentication. Authentication allows a user to be authenticated and authorized to use the network. And originally when 802.11, which is also known as Wi-Fi in generic terms, the terms are used synonymously, when a user authenticates to the network, it used to be in the first version of 802.11, there was something called WEP, which is Wired Equivalent Privacy, is what WEP stands for. And it was just meant to give you the same equivalent, privacy equivalent, as you get by plugging your wired NIC into a socket into a wired network, and you had no authentication. But because wireless goes over the air, WEP provided what was called a shared key mechanism, and that was the first iteration of Wi-Fi networks. Now, that was easy to crack because it had a very specific handshake set of transactions that went back and forth, and hackers were able to crack that right away. So essentially what ended up happening is 802.11, the wireless working group, formed a new group which dealt with enhanced security for 802.11 networks. And that working group was known as 802.11i. And out of 802.11i came a bunch of new mechanisms. And in addition to 802.11i, the IEEE also put together another working group called 802.1x. 802.1x provides port-based access control, where a port is a single point of attachment to the network, and each attachment is separately authenticated. And the 802.1x uses what's called Extensible Authentication Protocol, or EAP, as some people know it. And more specifically, EAP is encapsulated over the LAN, which is called EPOL. And the authenticator re-encapsulates EAP messages to the authentication format that's used and passes them to an authentication server. So this mechanism actually provides a whole new way of ensuring authentication, and it's done through a specific set of handshake messages that are transferred back and forth between the wireless client device and an authenticator server. Generally, an authenticator server is a Radius server, and that Radius server provides the conversation back and forth, and the access point provides the 802.1x controlled and uncontrolled port function that's defined in 802.1x as part of the protocol.
And Victoria, in the Microsoft network, that Radius server would be an IAS server, an Internet Authentication Services server, correct?
Correct. That's what we use on our back end to run the Radius server. It's hosted on the IAS server as part of the back end. So essentially, there was, as I was mentioning before, for security, there's authentication, and then there's what's called encryption or privacy, protection of the data that's transferred back and forth over the air. So as part of authentication, you had WEF, or you had the ability to use 802.1x, or you also could use WPA, which is Wi-Fi Protected Access. It was something that was taken out of the 802.11i standard. It was before it was ratified because they wanted to get a better encryption mechanism and authentication mechanism before the 802.11i standard was available. So they went ahead and did an early version of that called Wi-Fi Protected Access. And in a lot of homes, people use this. And this is available both in WPA, and it's also available in WPA2. WPA2 essentially is Wi-Fi's version of what 802.11i is. And in the home for authentication, a lot of people use WPA or WPA2 with what's called pre-shared keys or PSKs. And that provides an authentication mechanism for the home network in that the client and the access point have the pre-shared key, and both of them know that and no one else does, and so that provides an authentication mechanism.
And my understanding around WPA and that pre-shared key, and what makes it different and a better solution than WEP implementations, is that that pre-shared key generates a master key algorithm, and then all subsequent communications are re-encrypted with a new key pair. And so the key is constantly changing. Is that correct?
Yes.
So WEP, Wired Equivalent Protocol, or Wired Equivalent Privacy, is not equivalent to Wired, but WPA is certainly a much better solution.
Well, WPA provides another, a better, more robust security mechanism than WEP does, for the reasons just mentioned, in that it puts together a set
of... It's harder to crack.
Well, definitely it's harder
right?
to crack. And then if you really want to use... The ultimate, you use WPA2, which provides you with Advanced Encryption Services Algorithm, or AES, and it has a 256-bit key. It's more secure than either WPA, for example, and it provides a lot better key structure. It has the same master keys. And there are also provisions WPA2 using this encryption mechanism for 802.11i that allow you to pre-authenticate so that you don't necessarily have to go through the overhead of authentication as you've roam between access point to access point in an enterprise. So it cuts down on roaming time, and all of this is very important because this gets you ready to be able to deploy advanced services such as voice over IP, and eventually we get to go to an all wireless office. So those are some of the goals that we have for this technology.
Wow. Now, stepping back to the technologies involved then, too, in terms of the different parts, because I always, you know, when I'm looking at it and looking at a diagram of the network, and I see the components in my head, and I see the certainly the wireless client, I see the wireless access point, and the access point then pointing to a RADIUS server or IIS server for the sake of authentication and authorization. And in that communication, of course, the access point needs to be able to trust the IIS server, so there's a certificate associated with that relationship, I assume, and then certificate services for the sake of then each client as they make their connection. Is that pretty much how we're doing it at Microsoft?
Pretty much. The client actually has, we do have a certificate. We have a public key infrastructure that we've implemented, and in that public key infrastructure, we have certificate authorities, which are servers that authorize and validate the certificates that are passed out to each one of the clients. And each client, to obtain access to the wireless infrastructure, has to have a certificate that allows this access. And when a client associates with an access point, it begins the 802.1x conversation. And as part of that conversation, it sends in who it is, the domain that he's on, and he also sends in his certificates that are given to the user that's associated with that machine. And that certificate is then validated against a certificate authority. And once that certificate authority has validated it, the RADIUS server then provides the success mechanism as part of the 802.1x conversation and sends it back. In addition, we also use the IIS RADIUS function to provide our key, to plumb down our keys on our wireless clients for the privacy portion of the conversation. So all of the data packets that are protected with the encryption are also provided to us in that 802.1x exchange, and that's part of the new 802.11i standard.
Good.
So we authenticate the user, we authenticate the machine, we encrypt the data securely. Is that accurate? Is that an accurate summation?
Yes, that's very accurate. Now, some of the things that I get asked all the time when I'm talking to we have an IT showcase function where we talk to outside customers, or an executive briefing session, EBCs, where I also talk to outside customers. They want to know why we're not using, they don't necessarily have PKI infrastructures in place, and they want to be able to use what's called protected EAP or PEAP and username passwords. And that is something that we are working on for the future, and we should be able to deploy when Vista comes out. And it's also something that we're looking at for our wireless infrastructure, but it's not something that we have. One of the things Microsoft was fortunate in having is that they had a fully deployed PKI infrastructure that allowed us to embrace this very secure mechanism of using 802.1x and using EAP with Transport Layer Security, or TLS, that used our certificate structures. But not a lot of people have those, and to be able to facilitate that, we are definitely looking at also deploying PEAP with username and password functionality over the 802.1x conversation.
And for our customers that don't have a PKI infrastructure, we do provide guidance. There is a white paper called Deploying PEAP with Passwords, and that's easily found by searching Microsoft.com. You didn't have a hand in writing that, did you, Victoria?
No, I didn't. That comes out of our development group.
Gotcha.
Okay, so Victoria, just to wrap things up here, can you give us the top three things that every IT guy like me should know about securing their wireless LAN?
Yes, you want to ensure that you have a authentication mechanism in place, however you decide to provide it, and that the clients are always authenticated before they are allowed onto the network. You want to also provide privacy and protection through encryption for your payloads that are transferred over a wireless network, because it is over the air and isn't constrained by physical volumes as a wired network is. And then finally, you need to be ensure that you're able to manage and monitor your wireless LAN so you can identify rogues, you can locate problems where they're at, and then you have you can report on these so that you can begin intervention mechanisms. And sometimes those have to be manual as opposed to automated due to denial of service issues, for example, in very densely deployed buildings or multi-tenant buildings. So those are some of the three things. And I was just going to briefly mention a couple of challenges that we have as we're upgrading. So as you know, we are deploying 802.11a, which is 5 gigahertz, 54 megabits, and 802.11g in our upgrade, which is also 54 megabits of bandwidth. But we also, when we finish this deployment, it's going to take us about 18 months to finish this. By the time that gets done, we're going to also be ready to have 802.11n that's coming that promises very high throughput. So those are some of the challenges we have. We also want to go to an all-wireless office, and to be able to do that, we need to have 802.11e, which provides quality of service so that we can support voice over IP and some of the fast roaming mechanisms that are coming in 802.11r and neighbor reporting that's coming with 802.11k. And finally, in some of the future instances of our network, we're going to be able to provide outdoor support in our plazas and social areas. And also in the future, we're looking to deploy on our MS shuttle. We provide bus service to all of our campus buildings here in Redmond, and so that people can take advantage of productivity time and not have downtime during their shuttle rides. We're going to try and provide wireless on those shuttles.
I don't know if I'd like to, you know, interrupt my downtime. I mean, I think people need a drive in a break once in a while.
Well, I was going to say, if you have time, I do have one funny story.
Oh,
and that's when we originally deployed this. I actually got an email from a gentleman who told me he couldn't get wireless in the fourth stall of the men's room.
Oh, God.
So we have very sophisticated and dedicated users here at Microsoft, and they do take advantage of any time they can to get their work.
You put it very politely. That was nice.
I'll tell you the most exciting thing to me about the upcoming upgrade. When I do a lot of work at the New York Metro office, and we have customers coming in all the time, and they can't get on the wireless network. And my understanding is that moving forward, we're going to have that guest access available for them.
That's correct, and we actually do have that rolled out in a number of locations. We have it in Brussels. We have it in Cambridge, England. We have it in a number of our buildings that have been upgraded here on campus, our development and research buildings, in addition to some of our IT buildings. And yes, you're right. Every new building that gets the upgraded service will finally be able to provide guest access to our visitors.
That's great. Well, Victoria, thank you so much for joining us today. It was really a pleasure speaking with you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Many thanks to Michael Murphy and Kevin Remde as they speak with Victoria Poncini. To find out more, just go to our website, Microsoft.com/TNRadio. Up next, we check in with Aurora Queen with a look at upcoming events and webcasts you'll want to check out here on TechNet Radio.
Welcome to the TechNet Radio events calendar. I'm Aurora Queen. Today is Tuesday, August 29th, and this weekend is Labor Day weekend, so I didn't find any exciting conferences going on out there, which is fine, because you should probably be spending time with your family and friends and hopefully not attending conferences. But I did want to follow up on today's topic. I put a link up on our website, Microsoft.com/TNRadio, to see webcasts and also find out more info on how Microsoft does IT. Best Practices Revealed, get an in-depth look at how Microsoft IT plans for, deploys, and manages Microsoft products. There's a webcast I wanted to tell you about. It's going to be on demand at this point, but it is a good webcast to follow up on wireless technologies. It's titled Expert Zone Support Webcast, Explore New Networking Features in Windows Vista, and it's a level 200, and describes the Network Center, Network Explorer, and Network Map, and discusses new wireless networking technologies in Windows Vista. That URL for that one is a bit lengthy as well, so I'm just going to put that up on our website so you can grab it from there. And that's it for our events calendar this week. It is a brief one, I know, but if you have any events that you think I should know about or that you want me to list in this calendar, just drop me an email at tnradio@microsoft.com. For TechNet Radio, I'm Aurora Queen.
All right, Aurora Queen here on TechNet Radio. Thank you very much, Aurora. Coming up on next week's episode, this is something you'll want to know about: scripting. We're going to be interviewing Jeffrey Snover. He's a software architect behind Monad. That's a code name for Microsoft. He's going to explain what exactly that is, and he'll be kicking off our scripting month here on TechNet Radio. I want to thank you again for listening today, and as always, please do drop us a line. Our email address is tnradio@microsoft.com. For Michael Murphy, Kevin Remdy, and Aurora Queen, I'm Charlie Harger. Thanks for listening to TechNet Radio.